Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today I have Adam Kinney. Adam is a buddy and a former evangelist, technical evangelist for Microsoft, and is currently a UI integration, what should I say, specialist, Adam?
Yeah.
UI integrator?
Integration is about the most boring way you could say it, I think. Yeah.
For Pixel Lab.
Yes.
Pixel Lab is in Redmond. Where is Pixel Lab?
Yeah, well, we're out of the Seattle area. I mean, you know, Seattle.
Okay. And what the devil is a UI integration?
Yeah. It's in that area between development and design where, and it's great because this is what I enjoy doing the most, is when you work with designers to create a great visual design and then, as well as some interactive design as well. And then it comes to the point where you need to take those, you know, flat bits or vectors and turn them into some type of object or concept that can become programmable. So that's where I sit, right in between, where you're trying to break down those visuals and then program them and kind of like building up the UI. So I go across the gamut, I guess, between design and development.
So help me with the picture. Should I picture three separate individuals, a designer, a programmer, and you in between, or should I picture that you are actually doing the work of a designer and a programmer and integrating those two parts of your own work?
It depends on the project. I in like the current project I'm working on, I'm the developer as well. Sometimes the further back it goes kind of onto the server, that's when I kind of step back or we get somebody else because you can't do everything, or you could, you just won't do it that well. So there's kind of like a range where I sit. And normally it's in the middle to the development side. I do some design work, but normally I work with other designers.
But your design skills are fairly strong in order to be in that position.
Yes. What I think is you have to really care about the design as far as, you know, I'm really into the how understandable is it? You know, how well will the user get it? It's kind of usability, but not so much the how pretty can you make it. But is it clear what I'm trying to do here? And can I do it without instruction? So that's a lot of where my design side comes in. And yeah, I think to do the work, you really have to care about both sides.
Now, at Microsoft, and probably other companies, there's a distinction made between UI design and UX design.
Uh-huh.
Where, as I understand it, UI design, user interface design, has to do with what does it look like. User experience design, UX design, is what is the user's experience of interacting with this? Do they understand it? Do they know what to do next and so forth?
Yes. And that's where, like, traditionally, that could be where you're starting with just the wireframes and you're talking about workflows and user flows. But as you, I'm sure, are aware, the further out you go, the less people you have, the more roles each person takes. So I think definitely, you know, roles can get mixed up between different people. But yeah, I think a lot of what I would do is probably more on the UX side.
Now, when a customer comes to Pixel Lab, are they aware of all of these role concepts, or are they coming in and saying, here's what I want to build, and then you collectively take that and figure out who's going to do which work?
Yes, we figure out who's going to do which work, but I think that when people come to Pixel Lab, they know that we are a UI-focused kind of agency where we are more concerned about making, you know, impressive visual design that catches your attention and it keeps your interest as well. So I think, you know, we specialize in UI. Sometimes we help other companies where they're real strong on the back end with services, and we'll just work on the UI for them. But as far as, you know, once we get past that stage where they say, okay, we want to work together, how do we do this? And then we have kind of a set process that we'll share with them about coming up with, you know, depending on what stage we start at. If we're starting at just a concept, then, you know, that's when you begin with like mood boards and wireframes and all the way at the beginning.
Oh, what's a mood board? Tell us about that.
So a mood board, in my simple description, would be where, you know, you're at the beginning of the project. And you just want to get a feel, or you want to discern what the user should feel as they're using the product. So is it a fun, happy application? Is it serious? What time? A lot of times it'll include adjective lists as well as kind of photos that express some type of feeling. So that's where the board comes up. It's kind of like, imagine just pinning a bunch of photos on a board, and then you look at it and you're like, yes, that's what I want the application to feel like.
And do you find that doing that actually carries through to creating a different kind of application? I mean, that's a very touchy-feely beginning.
It is, but, you know, in an extreme example, you could say, well, we get to this mood board, and the more the client looks at it, the more they want to add clowns and balloons to it. The more whimsical it gets, that can help you then on the next step of colors. So you're like, oh, I need some bright, fun colors. And then going into the UI, you know, we're not going to have sharp corners. We're going to have round corners. We're going to have kind of whimsical shapes. And then once you get into the interactive part, then the animations then don't just move in a linear fashion or in a smooth easing. Instead, they may have a bit of a bounce. So hopefully that, I mean, that could show you definitely extreme. We don't do a lot of clown applications, but you know, that could be initialized at the mood board stage.
Okay, we'll follow up with at the end of the year with how many clown applications you did this year.
Yeah, that's clown, not cloud. I know cloud is more popular, but, you know, we're into clowns.
I like it. We'll put the clowns on the cloud and we'll be all set.
Right.
When we spoke last, you were dividing your time between HTML5 and more of the plugins and more of the XAML-based programming. I understand that these days you've been focused a lot more on HTML5.
That's correct.
And what are you doing with HTML5? What kinds of work?
One thing that we've done a couple times now, which is really fun, is making an HTML5 a game, a casual game. Some of the challenge was on purpose to say, well, could you build this with Canvas? Is this something that you could do? Could you build a casual photorealistic game? So we've done a couple games, and that's been a ton of fun and surprising that you can actually pull it off with just JavaScript and HTML. And definitely that's something that, you know, we're looking to do more of. Another thing that I would say we've been working on is infographics, where you have a complex set of data that you're trying to help the user understand by creating some graphic. It's impressive work to be able to pull that data into something that's that the user can figure out. So part of that, when you get that much data, is you need to not only have kind of smart views of the data, but as well as when the user starts to interact with it, if you can even have the animation help explain some of it as well. So they're kind of very UI intensive. It's not like a form application where they're entering data. Instead, they're just trying to read it. But there's a lot of complex visualizations going on to show the data. And that's all been in HTML5.
And when you say it's in HTML5, is that categorically different from just building an HTML application with JavaScript?
No, I think that's a great point to touch on, because HTML5 is great. I think it's a movement in the sense of, actually, yeah, the project I'm working on, we need to have kind of some backwards browser support. So we can't take full advantage of everything. Actually, in this one, we're not even using Canvas as the drawing API. But to me, when I say HTML5 application, I feel like it's, you know, it still could be some HTML4 stuff, but we're much smarter about how we write JavaScript, and we have great frameworks like jQuery. So it feels like a separation there. Even though I'm not using a lot of HTML5 tags, I think some of the CSS I have is CSS3, but it's really like I'm writing an HTML5 application because I'm not writing old spaghetti code or just a mess. I'm using JavaScript, but in a smart way.
So let me pick that apart a little bit and play the ignorant role and try to understand. If I used HTML4 and restricted myself entirely to HTML4, but I used JavaScript in this smart way and I used jQuery with it to make it, to make the cross browser functionality work cleanly, would that be an HTML5 experience?
That's a great question. I think the hard part is the level of support or the maturity of the browsers, where, you know, because they have gotten to the level that they are, you're still using, that's still an advantage, I guess, where if you had written this same application using JavaScript or using jQuery and HTML4 maybe like 2 years ago, it wouldn't be an impressive experience. But because the browsers have upped their game as much as they have, I think that's adding to the experience as well. So it's hard to say that just the jQuery and the smart architecture and using the good parts of JavaScript makes it what it is. It's kind of the big everything that's happening right now, I guess, is a big part of it.
Right. So, but what I'm getting from what you're saying is that this is not, the distinction between HTML4 and HTML5 is not about simply extensions to the markup language and additional things that you can do with the markup language. It's the integration of capabilities of the browser, the markup language, increases in understanding about how to use JavaScript well, and frameworks for JavaScript that have been developed recently.
Yes. Yeah. And that's another thing to be really clear about, which is good to point out, is for me, when I say HTML5, the main features that we use are not just HTML tags. I think audio and video have been really huge for us as far as new HTML tags. But otherwise, the main features that have impacted the applications we've written have been CSS3 as well as the Canvas API.
Great. Let's talk about CSS3. How dramatically different is that from CSS2?
I think it's huge. It adds a lot of the features that we've been trying to fake before. Yes, it's very big. It's definitely something you want to read up on if you haven't been keeping track.
So give us an example of a couple things that you can do with CSS3.
The funny one that comes up, and we've mentioned this already, but it's rounded corners is something that was always something you had to kind of simulate with multiple divs to create rounded corners. Now that's part of CSS. There's things like box shadow. That's a nice thing. But I would say one of the pieces that really adds, one of the bigger features is, again, it's another kind of like technology, but it's been web fonts. Because web fonts, they allow us to maintain the visual design that we're going for. But instead of all of those fancy labels and fancy headers being an image, they're actual text. So, you know, that means that they're more accessible. You can actually copy and paste them, and they're easier to maintain. But because of using these custom web fonts, you can still keep the visual design looking great. So web fonts have been really huge.
Okay, I have a buddy who's been working in ASP.NET, and he does JavaScript and Ajax. And when I had Phil Hack on, I asked him, at what point will my buddy be falling behind if he doesn't check out MVC? And I don't want to interpret what Phil said literally, but what I walked away with was now. Now is the time. If you want to keep up, you really want to take a look at MVC. Is it also time for him to look beyond JavaScript and to look at JavaScript in terms of HTML5 and in terms of the jQuery library? And is it also time that he has to start looking at CSS3? Are all of these now so fruitful that he's falling behind if he's not looking at them?
Yes. That's my answer.
I love when I give a 3-minute question and the answer is one syllable.
Well, I mean, you know, it's I think JavaScript, you know, you start, if you're rebooting on JavaScript to write the new way or the HTML5 way or whatever you want to call it, you start with the books like JavaScript, the good parts. Then you get to like JavaScript patterns. Then you can check out jQuery. It's funny that you mentioned MVC as well, because some of the JavaScript app frameworks, they use the MVC pattern as well. So those two are tied together. So understanding MVC can be important on the web as well.
Now, I had Elijah Manner on, and he's terrific and amazing and knows jQuery inside out. And the very first book that he mentioned was the very first book that you mentioned, which is JavaScript, the Good Parts.
Yes.
What stands out about that?
It's if you are a JavaScript developer who started out like I did with JavaScript, which was copy and pasting from other pages, you know, back in '90s when I didn't know how to program, I didn't know what I was doing. I was just trying to like add a dynamic date to the page or something like that. I think that we learned a lot of bad habits that way, or just didn't understand what we were doing. And what you'll find in that book is it's a good way to to just find the good parts and to learn some of the good practices, because JavaScript itself is kind of a loose language, and in some parts it's great, in some parts it's not good. So that's the idea of the book, is to show you here's the good parts. And the other reason that I like it is I started out doing web stuff, then I moved on to .NET Framework when it came out. So when you move to something like C# that is a typed system and has a lot of different patterns and it's very sure about different ways to do things, I think when you read something like The Good Parts, it helps you make that move from somebody who's so concerned about everything, like in C#, to being able to relax a bit and feel good about the patterns that are available in JavaScript. Just an example would be like an anonymous type, or kind of the object system in JavaScript compared to a typed object in C#.
Okay, so now let's say you put my buddy into a panic and he's beginning to feel like he is falling behind. What's the curve for him? What's the learning curve? How does he begin to scale that, and how much work is ahead of him to come up to date?
Of course, it depends on where you're starting. I think coming from C#, kind of going into the reinvigorated JavaScript I think the hardest part was kind of relaxing and saying, hey, it'll be okay. It's interpreted and, you know, I can compile it using some tools. And so I think coming from a more modern programming language, there's some of that, the relaxing into the scripting language. But I think the great thing about it is that there is so many other people doing it and there are so many resources. Something like jQuery, if you go to the site, you know, so many people use it that there is a ton of documentation, there are a ton of plugins, and it's just that it's a huge community. So I think that makes it easier to get started. The other thing is that all of this stuff is kind of coming together in some ways now. So if you look at something like the HTML5 boilerplate, which is a kit that you can download to kind of start your HTML5 page, that group, they've done so much work to say, well, this is what works right now, and this is the way to try and mitigate all the issues you may run into, and this is the best way to start a template. You know, that type of resource is just, very valuable. So there's a ton of resources out there, and I don't think it's hard to start slow. You know, you don't have to just jump in and use everything in CSS3. CSS2 stuff still works. So I think taking it slow is possible.
Okay. And for those of us who have simple blogs that are built on top of WordPress, should we be looking at using the pantheon, I guess is the word, of HTML5 technology to make these blogs sing and dance a little bit better?
You could. You know, I think about blogs, the big thing is you're reading, right? You're reading articles, you're reading posts. It may help you build like a better demo of code that you're talking about, but I don't think it's something that you'd need to jump to unless you're looking at the more semantic markup where you're going to use the header and the footer tag and the nav tag. Like if that's, that would make sense. But I think a lot of this new technology, a lot of the newer stuff has been more useful in the type of applications we've done that have been really visual, like these infographics and of course casual games. So I don't think you need to jump on it unless you're going to go into the markup side.
You've used the term casual games a couple times. And what are you distinguishing there? Casual? What's a not casual game?
Halo is not casual. It's a 3D first-person shooter. It's pretty hardcore as far as the graphics capabilities that are needed. But something like a billiards game, where even though it's maybe photorealistic and it has kind of a perceived 3D graphics, it's still a casual game. And the other thing, I mean, it's a whole industry of casual games. The idea is that you pick it up and you can just play it for a bit and it's fun and then you can put it down. It's not something like Halo where you need to first learn how to play it, get better at it, complete the campaign, then go into multiplayer and, you know, get beat by other people who play more than you.
Yes, the learning curve on Halo is sufficient that I walked around for a long time looking for something to shoot. Yeah. Killed a bunch of innocent birds.
Oh, yeah. I remember that first mission where the emu looking things run at you.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And then sort of gave up, I'm afraid. So I'm not a hardcore gamer.
There you go. But if you were given a billiards table and as you moved the mouse, the pool stick moved, you would click it probably, and then the pool stick would shoot. And you'd be like, oh, I get it.
And where do people find these casual games?
Well, you know, they've been definitely a huge industry for Flash games. Flash-based games. And now a lot of people have started moving to HTML5 because it works across more devices. So they're all over. The one that I'm talking about specifically with the pool game is Agent 8 Ball. It's it's just a canvas-based HTML5 application for making a pool game. It's called Agent 8 Ball because we kind of added a theme. So some of the balls are actually bombs that, you know, once activated will blow up until you deactivate them. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of games out there.
So this is at agent8ball.com.
Yep, there you go.
And that's available for anyone to start playing with and see what the graphics are like and what the look and feel is like.
Yeah, yep. It's just a free game that's just there posted for people to try out.
And how did that come about? Who set that up and who put that together?
So that was a project by Pixel Lab, and we created that along with the IE9 beta launch last September, because they had improved the IE9 rendering engine so much that they wanted to show it off. So one way to do that is to create a game that would definitely tax other browsers at the time, because it has things like shadows and lighting, and you know, there's a lot going on there. So yeah, that's how that came about.
So Pixel Lab was contracted to do that.
Yes.
And I know that you were also contracted, I don't know whether it was Pixel Lab or you personally, to build some of the training videos for Windows Phone. Tell me about that. Where is that and what is that?
So those, the videos are a How Do I video series about the new Mango update. So what can you do in the Windows Phone Mango SDK that you couldn't do before? Then that's really the idea, is to focus on all of the new features. And that's on the MS Dev site, which is MSDN's kind of new resource or site for training. But they're all posted up there as a Windows Phone Mango series. But it was a lot of fun, because it's always nice to look at the new features. But a lot of these are features that I think they're really going to help Windows Phone applications to appear different. Something, you know, unique compared to other apps on other phones. Things like the secondary tiles, where you can kind of add a shortcut to a screen in your Windows Phone app onto the home page or onto the start screen. Like one of my favorite or a good example of that would be the Amazon application, where it has a scanner and you can scan a USB or a UPS code. Well, with this, you could say, you know, that's like two or three screens deep. Instead, you could add a shortcut to that. So on your start screen, you'd have the Amazon app and then also a Amazon barcode page tile. So you could click either one, you know, start at home or start right away at that scanner. So if you're in the store, you can say, hey, I'm going to scan this and see what I could get it for on Amazon. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the idea is, you know, there's just some unique features that were made available in Mango that I think are pretty good. So it was fun to create these How Do I videos, where the whole goal is to, they're like 10 to 15 minutes. And it's just like, how do I access contacts and appointments data? And so it's just kind of like a very pointed explanation, demo, and then the video's over and you get the source code. So,
and I've been shamelessly ripping them off into into blog posts and my presentation at Build and anything else I can possibly leverage your work for. So,
well, hey, that's what it's there for. Yeah, that's good.
And Microsoft is highly appreciative of them. I know that the folks over who are looking at how to get this information out to the developer community are definitely using your videos and valuing those videos as at least a starting point on what's new in Mango in the phone. And we're going to see, obviously, a good bit more of that as Mango comes to fruition. And, oh, there's a pun. And,
and nice.
And as Build rolls around as well.
Build.
I'm excited about Build. It's coming up very soon. We're recording this on the 2nd of September, and Build is, the 12th of September? So
yep.
This is. Are you going to be able to get to Build?
I will be there.
You will be.
For sure, yes. And the reason I'm so excited about it is because they're finally going to tell us what's going on.
Fine. That's what
I'm saying. You know?
Yeah, well, there'll be a lot more direction coming out of Build. I think that's more than fair to say.
Yes.
And there are a lot of folks who are looking forward to finding out more about Windows 8 and more about the phone and more about how all of this fits together. So Build is going to be a very exciting time.
Yeah.
So are you going, are you presenting or you're going as a participant or?
I'm going as a participant.
And will other folks from Pixel Lab be there?
Yes. Yes. I think almost the whole team will be there.
Really?
I'm pretty excited about it. Yep.
Well, I'm going to definitely have to bang on your door and say, let me get together with these folks and meet all these people who are doing this amazing creative stuff.
Yes. But we are leaving a day early.
You're not staying for the last day.
We are not, because there's a conference up here in Seattle called the Hive Conference, and it's a local design and tech conference. So we had to come up so we could hang out with our design geeks up here.
I see. Okay.
So, sorry.
No, that's okay. I'll sit in the dark. Don't worry.
Yeah.
So what else are you doing with yourself, Adam?
You know, I am... So since I've been doing this work, it's also allowed me to have some other free time. And I wish I had more to say right now, but one of the things that I've missed that I haven't done in a long time has to do with illustration and animation. And that's been a big kind of extra project for me right now. So I don't have anything to show or anything to share, but I've been exercising those muscles and I want to share. So I'm just not ready yet, but I'm excited about it.
Well, that sounds very cool and very promising. We'll have to have you back when you can tell us more about that.
Yes, definitely.
So if you were to say what was the biggest theme in your work over the last 6 months, what would you say that was?
The biggest theme, I would say, did you say the last 6 months?
Sure. Let's do the last 6 months.
It's definitely been HTML5. Just how to actually do it, how to get it to work, how to take advantage of it, and how much of our current skills transfer to it. And it's been great that that's been a lot of skills have transferred to it. So that's been the main thing, HTML5.
And it's been fun.
Yes, it's really fun. It's just, you know, the aspect of CSS, JavaScript, really learning to embrace it has been really fun.